Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 518, July 28th, 2011. Steven?
This F1Weekly podcast brought to you by the donation button. Look at it located on the front page of the F1Weekly website. Click on it. Make a donation. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. On today's program, Bruno Senna should simply replace Heidfeld for the rest of the season. Part 2 of the 2011 Formula 1 season may blow your mind. Renault may advise Williams on driver selections. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with Nasser Hamid and special interview with Max Angelelli, which is a very interesting interview. Lots of history here. And you only get this stuff right here on your favorite F1 podcast, F1Weekly.com. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers, and yourself?
Absolutely outstanding. Of course, we're going right into the Hungarian Goulash Grand Prix.
Yeah, the race in a bowl, don't they?
Yes, it's going to be exciting. I am telling you, back-to-back races is really where it comes for me because not much time to change anything on the car. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Go back to your old spec wheel nuts.
It's going to be great. And, of course, Sebastian Vettel certainly will be reaching down to those bootstraps and lifting himself up to make sure this never happens again. I know him. He's going to be going into that mode where there is no way I'm not going to get pole position at this Grand Prix.
Be interesting to see how well the Red Bulls do this weekend. They weren't quite as quick, but the fact that Mark Webber put it on pole seemed to indicate that the car was quick. But for some reason, Sebastian wasn't. Maybe too many distractions in Germany for the young German.
Maybe had a couple of frowls on the side.
Oh, frowls, yes.
But still, it's going to be exciting. And the big problem, Stephen, is not. It's not that the Red Bull is not quick. Is McLaren and Ferrari are catching up.
Yeah, that kind of has something to do with it.
Yes. And that's why this weekend is going to be a great weekend. A lot of history for Fernando, for Jenson Button, for Nico Rosberg. It's going to be his 100th Grand Prix. I mean, it's just going to be a great Grand Prix. The Hungaroring always throws up something interesting. And the biggest question is what kind of weather we're going to have. Is it going to be hot? Are the temperatures of the tires going to be high? Is the track going to be cool? And right now, all indications are that it's going to be cooler weather than normal, which is very fascinating. And I'm telling you, Ferrari and Fernando is the one to watch.
Really? I thought it would have been Lewis Hamilton.
Lewis Hamilton, certainly with the momentum. But usually he doesn't carry that momentum in following races.
And he tends to have challenges at the Hungaroring, too. I remember a couple of years back where he was charging up the field and ran over something and was out.
Not only that, but what Martin Whitmarsh has already come out and said, don't count Vettel out. I don't think Vettel is cracking under the pressure. Vettel's still the man to beat. And he says, quote, he wasn't under that much pressure. He was out of the race, in my opinion, when he made his mistake. People may characterize it as cracking under pressure, but in fairness, I don't think that was the case. They were simply making mistakes. Drivers make them, so do teams. All are human beings. A lot of blah, blah.
And he wasn't the only one to make that exact same mistake. So
anyway, Martin Whitmarsh basically is saying, we're prepared for Vettel to be bouncing back any second now, and it's going to happen. And I expect it to happen here. But don't get me wrong. Jenson Button does well at this track. Fernando does well at this track. And it's going to be, once again, the top three fighting it all the way. This is going to be... This second part of the season, Steven, I'm telling you, is going to blow our minds. I think it's going to be a great, great second part of the season. And I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be... Not the runaway championship that people were expecting from Vettel. Obviously, he still has a lot of points ahead of everybody else, but still, things are changing. McLaren and Ferrari are going to put the pressure on, and we've got some exciting Grand Prix ahead.
Looking forward to it. It should be a lot of it depends on how well Sebastian Vettel does in the next couple of races. If he wins the next couple of races, then the season's going to kind of be there. But the fact that we've seen Ferrari and McLaren once again competitive is going to make it a lot more difficult for him to
I absolutely run agree. Off with it. But I don't expect Vettel to be winning the next couple of races. Trust me, Steve, I'm a professional. The other thing, of course, this is the famous place where Felipe Massa got boinked on the head.
Ooh. That'll be interesting.
Of course.
He'll make sure that he's not following Rubinho at any time on the track.
Well, I think that's a given, and that emotional scar will take control of that for sure. But still, Fernando's number two, will be visiting the circuit and the hospital staff who helped him in his recovery and giving congratulatory thank yous to everyone for his recovery. And, of course, he'll probably hand out
Ferrari key fobs.
Key fobs, panties, and anything else that's red. But still, I think it's a nice thing to do. And he spent a lot of time in Budapest. And good for Felipe. This is actually part of the recovery, Steve. It's continuous.
Continuous.
You know, it never ends when you've had such a severe injury. So I'm really glad for Felipe, because Felipe's got to, you know, he's got to do well in the second part of the season. But with Fernando on a roll pushing, and of course Ferrari going out and saying that they will chop chop and attack at every moment, and and I'm not sure if Fernando goes back and looks at film of the Grand Prix or the previous Grand Prix and see where he could hone his skills a little bit, because you know he's a great driver, but still. Those are good ideas.
Yeah. You never know. He might go back. And I'm sure that on some level, he goes back and looks. Maybe there's certain portions of the race that he recalls where he wasn't sure, or he did something that he thought was maybe not what he should have been doing, and he'll go back and look and refresh his memory as to what it was he did or did not do.
Yeah, I mean, I do that all the time on this program. Listen to the podcast, the previous ones, and go, oh boy, what was I thinking?
Let me keep doing them.
Yes. So, fascinating. It's going to be a great, great weekend. And to be honest with you, off the top of my head, I'm not sure, but I suspect it's going to be mediums and softs again from Pirelli.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't recall hearing what the call-out was for this weekend.
And, of course, Pirelli now is pushing for more Formula One testing, and they'd like to see testing at Grand Prix sites. In other words, testing after a Grand Prix at that track, which is more relevant, gives them relevant information, instead of testing at a place where we might not even have a race ever.
Right, like Barrigade.
Yes, Pirelli director of motorsports, Paul Hembury, says we'd love to do a mid-season test in correct championship conditions, preferably at championship circuits. It would be ideal for us to stay on as we do after the young driver tests at Abu Dhabi, because then you have all the data from the race, plus the data you will get from any modifications. So I think that's a good suggestion, and I certainly hope that we do get some testing, and I really don't care where it is.
We've that Bernie was putting forth that idea at some point last season as to, you know, having in-season testing on Mondays after races.
Correct.
To basically, you know, you're already there. You've already booked your hotel room. You know, an extra night isn't that big a deal. It's easier to set up than pack up and move on. You couldn't do it on a back-to-back.
Obviously.
But you could do it, you know, when you've got a two-week break or more. You know, like this weekend at the Hungaroring, you know, he could stay over because the next race isn't until the end of August.
Right. Bruno Senna getting Friday practice for the Renault, taking Heidfeld car on Friday practice. And you know what? Eric Boullier needs to become more testicular. And listen, Heidfeld has done an okay job, but okay...
Well, exactly, he's done an okay job.
It's okay. Okay is nothing. And Boullier has already been complaining about... He has not taken the team by the throat and taking charge like Kubica does. You know, let's put loving friendships aside and throw Bruno in there for a couple of races. Yeah. Put him under pressure because, you know what? Bruno's already 27 years old. If he doesn't have it, find out now and get him out of there.
Exactly.
You know, when you're part of a driver development program and you're 27...
Nowadays, you're ancient.
You're ancient. It's over. Find out now and get rid of him and move on to the next candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate this procrastinating. It gets us nowhere. And Renault, you could sit there and whine and complain and say, you know, tell Nick Heidfeld you need to do something now. Listen, Heidfeld has reached deep down. This is what he has. This is what he's had. It's not going to get any better.
No, that's where he's always been. He's pretty much lived up to his expectations. I agree with you. I think that they should throw Bruno in and let him see. The other thing I see for Porcena, has he had a race seat in anything since he was in GP2? You know, he was at HRT last year, but that lasted about half the season until somebody walked up with a truckload of cash.
You know what's going to happen? He's going to wind up driving with Jacques Villeneuve in the Brazilian Tin Tops. Trust me, you heard it here first.
Or he'll come over. And then that name holds a little water here in the States, so he could probably get a ride in NASCAR.
You believe that, Steven?
Indy.
I don't know about that, but we'll see. Anyway, Virgin, they've signed Timo Glock to 2014. He's young. He's got lots of...
upside?
He does have a lot of upside, and really, Virgin has a lot of work to do. So, you know, they haven't talked about the second driver. I don't think D'Ambrosio is going to get signed. I think they're looking around. So, you know, maybe if Bruno Senna could shine in this Friday practice,
yeah,
this could be a seat for him.
That's a place he could go, yeah.
I don't know. But we'll see what happens. But still, Timo Glock signed. Nobody else has signed for the second seat at Virgin. And we'll probably hear more about that in the upcoming weeks. But still, we've got a great Grand Prix. This is going to be the stuff that we're waiting for. Trust me.
You mentioned something about Renault having driver input at Williams.
That's right, Steven. This vintage dude and Pastor Maldonado with his big bucks from Citgo. I don't know. I might have been fantasizing.
Yeah, you have a hard time believing that, you know, Williams would... Well, they ended up...
They're paying Rubinho. He's not bringing any money. So
no,
please.
But he's making what? He's making Formula One minimum.
I don't know. I'm not sure. But still, you never know. Renault always has an input in some of these teams. Trust me, Steve.
Yeah, maybe they can place, you know, their reserve driver or something.
We'll see. But still, interesting stuff. This is going to be a great weekend. Trust me, Steven. Stay up Boulier and watch it.
You know, somebody like Nico Hülkenberg in that seat.
That would be great. Nico Hülkenberg should go into that seat. That's a great idea because, to be honest with you, a seat opening up at Force India the way DeRista and Sutil are driving is going to be tough.
No, it's not happening.
It's going to be very, very hard. Unless Hülkenberg brings in the big bucks.
Either that or Sutil somehow, you know, comes back and starts demanding more money or something.
Yes, or he breaks his Achilles heel just like Alec Trebek did today. So, I don't know. But those things do happen, Steve.
His Achilles tendon?
Yeah, something like that, Steve. You hear it here. This is the news right here at the front. Anyway, quickly, we're going to take a quick break. Please, stay tuned for this outstanding interview with Max Angelelli. Interesting interview, to say the least. So we'll be back after this brief message from Bell Auto Care.
Do you own a European or Japanese vehicle and live in the New York tri-state area? Then I want to tell you about Bell Auto Care. Bell Auto Care is a Bosch authorized repair shop with over 35 years of dedication in providing honest, friendly, and up-to-date repair and preventative maintenance to vehicles like yours and mine. Not only is this the shop in the New York area to take your European or Japanese car, they are F1 and MotoGP enthusiasts as well. So go to bellautocare.com to check out their special deals, F1 and MotoGP news, or for more information, and ring their bell to care for your car.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the Guru, Nasser Hamid.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Greetings and divine regards. Thanks to Pastor Joe and his smoking hot wife, we now know the good Lord is a fan of oval racing. Just a personal opinion, I would prefer Ajip as the official fuel of Hellfire, as their logo has a dog with fire coming out of his mouth, and I'm sure you've seen it many times during the Italian Grand Prix and other races also. Amen to that?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Hallelujah.
Thank you. Back on Earth, at the Nürburgring, bulls were slaughtered in front of the arena. Romain Grosjean takes another GP2 win. Valtteri Bottas finally wins a GP3 race. Casey Stoner wins at Laguna Seca to extend his lead in MotoGP. In the German Grand Prix, young man from Heppenheim, Sebastian Vettel, was a stranger in paradise and nowhere to be seen on the podium on home soil. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Question is the DOS party over? What say you, Mr. Rogers?
Of course not. One race means nothing. He's still a great driver in a fantastic car powered by a wonderful motor. This is going to go on. But the problem is people are catching up and nipping at his heels. One Fernando, the other one Mr. Hamilton. Jenson Button could show up occasionally, but you never know.
Yes. The first shock came in qualifying. For the first time after 14 races, he was not on the front row. Had a spin in the race, but still has a good Gesundheit lead in the championship. This is his championship to lose.
Absolutely.
And I think he will pull it off. I think it's like you were saying, it's going to get very exciting. Hamilton will win a few races. Nando will win a few races. Maybe they'll have to give Massa another message. And then it's going to get harem scarum towards the end. But I think in the end it will be Sebastian Vettel again.
And I think the messages in the second part of the season is going to be fascinating. And it reminds me of that song, Messages.
Yeah, and Massa is now getting messages from Luca also, which we will come to in a minute here.
Fascinating stuff.
Yes, sir. What a season it would be if race winner Hamilton can do to Vettel what Seb did to Weber last year. Both Hamilton and Vettel are looking for their second championships. So it will be second championship, so that will be very interesting. There was hope for Vettel's teammate, poor Mark Webber, who started from pole. But he lost the lead at the start, but at least he led a race for the first time this year and made it to the podium. Hard to believe this guy almost won the world championship last year. He's with the same team.
Felipe Massa almost won a world championship too. Now,
I know,
remember
but
him?
Yeah, he has the same problem as Weber.
You think?
It's the teammate, you know.
Damn.
Yes, Weber has not won a race since Hungaroring last year, and the 2011 Hungarian Grand Prix is happening this weekend. So it's been a long, long time now. Sad but true. The race saw 100 start for Nico Rosberg in Formula One, and number 200 for Jenson Button. Now Nico is on the Jenson program. Still looking for a win after 100 races.
He was saying that Mark Webber's had a long time between wins. What about Nico Rosberg? He has yet to win a race.
Yeah, but let's not forget, Jenson Button went over 100 races before he won his first Grand Prix.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Pardonnez-moi.
Yeah, yeah. It's time for some Stella Artois again. Okay, Nico set the fastest lap in his Grand Prix debut in Bahrain some years ago while with Williams, which was very impressive.
It was exciting.
Got a lot of people excited, including myself. A feat also accomplished by Swiss driver Mark Schurer in his first F1 drive in Brazil many moons and sambas ago. And, you know, this talking about Jensen's first win and Weber's first win and blah, blah, blah. It really boils down to if you don't have the package, the UPS man is not knocking for delivery.
I prefer Federal Express.
Federal Express? Okay. What about DHL?
They're
or
too.
Else? Okay, Nico was lost in the rapture of love shown by the motor racing world, which of course included myself again, when his teammate was announced for the 2010 season. Since then, Nico has been the man at Mercedes. Like Jensen before, someday he will have the package and will deliver. He has done some very impressive races, I have to say. He qualified over a second faster than Schumacher for the home Grand Prix, which again beckons the question, if they have the same package as Red Bull, it would look very bad for Michael not to win races and Nico is winning or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, thank God for that.
Yeah. Button took an impressive win in Canada on the final lap and has done very well against his illustrious teammate. But it will be quite an achievement if he can ever beat Lewis Hamilton to the championship in the same team. And that will really prove that Jenson Button is super, super duper. What's so funny?
I agree with you. I just don't see that happening.
No, same here. Now here's the Massa continuing saga of Massa. When he pulls into Ferrari pits, Luca goes on the Jim Morrison program. I can't seem to find your face in my mind. It's a pretty sad story there. The door to Maranello may still be open for Massa, but looks like Mark Mayo's prophecy, who may still be celebrating his birthday. His prophecy on the forum once some years ago was, Massa will never ever win a championship, is coming true. Sad, but then again, that's reality of motor racing. Ricciardo this time almost matched the time of Antonio Liuzzi in qualifying, but both were out in Q1 as expected. The Australian completed 57 of the 60 laps at the end of the race. So a lot of hype accompanied his debut, and one has to give a man 8 to 10 races to see. But you know, if you go 5, 6, 7 races and you still have not out-qualified your teammate, then they will say, Jean-Eric Vergne, step up to the plate. And that's again racing. The financial story of the ring is not so rosy. The track has debts of more than 500 million euros. This year, race attendance was only 68,000, despite the presence of the past and future legends of German motorsports. There is also a Save the Ring campaign going on. The organizers of the Nürburgring 24-hour race are also looking at taking their show somewhere else. So expect a Nürburgring 24 hours at Spa or, you know, some other place. Let's hope Formula One racing does not move from the Nürburgring to Nigeria Ring. And talking of Nigeria, they have a lot of oil also. I'm kind of surprised Bernie and Charlie Whiting have not been seen in Lagos or, you know, Biafra. Remember Biafra in the 70s?
One of my favorite places.
Oh, absolutely. Well,
they may have gotten taken by one of those email scams.
There you
go. From the Bank of Nigeria.
Yeah. Instead of getting $25 million from Nigeria, they sent them $25 million. Damn. And talking of new places, apparently there is some sort of activity going on in Mexico where Tilke was seen there and some other group of designers, which I believe is a U.S. firm, they were seen and they've been to the track, Ricardo and Pedro Rodriguez, Hermanos Rodriguez. So they may want to revamp the track instead of spending $200 million, but surely they should not do it in Mexico or any other place for that matter. So let's see what happens. It'll be good to have a race in Texas and then cross the border, have a Taco Bell, run for the border, watch another race, come back.
And then we get to have the in-flight burrito?
Absolutely, on the ground. Yeah, wouldn't that be beautiful?
Damn.
Life is good. Hapidos at the ring. And thanks again to Mr. Interrupter for posting a link, and that link stopped, so he posted another one. So, gracias. Italian Luca Filippi celebrated 100th start in the series with victory for Coloni team, which is, of course, Enzo Coloni's team. Pole sitter from Francia, Charles Pic, was second, with another Francais, Romain Grosjean, third. In Sunday's sprint race, a third French driver was on his way to victory, our friend Mr. Jules Bianchi, but he made a small mistake with a lap to go, and Grosjean took the big prize. Felipe was third, and Jules is now singing to the team, I'm sorry.
So sorry.
Yes, sir. Romain Grosjean is now looking very good to win the championship and add to his two previous GP2 championships, both in the now discontinued Asian series. Mexican Esteban Gutierrez, another of our friends, he was fighting for the lead when a wheel departed from his Lotus ART car.
That is always a problem.
Yeah. You know, Esteban Gutierrez, very talented. Jules Bianchi, very talented. Jules did not win a race last year in his first season. It's pretty much my prophecy has come true, which I mentioned to one of the managers. He didn't like my comment. And I said, my comment was that to get into Formula One, you have to win the GPT first year, like Lewis Hamilton, because if you win in your second year, you know, you're just another good driver. And he got the impression I was saying his man was not good. I says, you know, another good driver is like Jenson Button, still can win the championship. But it's really looking like GP2, it's a two-year program. But every now and then somebody's going to come and say, you know, let me show you how to win races in my first year. These things happen. GP3, Hape Tres. First win of the year for Rio Haryanto from Java country in Indonesia. Lewis Williamson from Scotland was second, and Valtteri Bottas from Finlandia third. And Mr. Bottas celebrated his long-awaited and much-deserved maiden win in race two on Sunday. Alexander Sims was second, and Nigel Melker from the Netherlands was third. In the championship, since nobody seems to win a second race this season, the championship is very close, or tight, as they say. Only 10 points separate the top six. Sims leads with 34 points, followed by Lewis Williamson and New Zealander Mitch Evans, both on 28 points. Both are rookies and both are doing a very good job. Bottas was my preseason call for the championship based on his experience and success. He is sixth with 24 points, and he is now 10 points behind the championship leader. Frankly, I will not be surprised, given his experience and talent, that he comes through and wins the championship. Sooner or later, somebody has to get a second win. Bottas' backers are Aces Management, which include Mika Hakkinen and Toto Wolff. His claim to fame is he is one of the big investors in Williams F1 team, and also Susie Stoddard's boyfriend. Formula 2 at Brands Hatch. Maiden victory for Jack Clark in race 1. Ramon Pinedo of Spain was the winner of the second race over pole sitter Mirko Bortolotti of Italy. And winner from race 1, Clark from UK, was OK in third. Bortolotti leads the championship 187 points to 151 over Swiss driver Christopher Zanella. Now we cross the pond. Like to see Canada, Edmonton, IndyCar Racing. Sato San on pole position. Winner was Will Power for Penske. Teammate Castro, No Dash Neves was second, and Frank Keary third. There were two Indy Lights races. Winners were Esteban Guerrieri from Argentina and Joseph Newgarden from Tennessee, USFA. Newgarden leads the championship over Guerrieri, 361 points to 298. Esteban Guerrieri last year raced in World Series by Renault, and Joseph Newgarden raced in GP3. And now we come to our home event, major international event, MotoGP at Laguna Seca. Moi was there, sans media credentials. Had a chance to talk to media people from Ducati, Yamaha, and Honda, and they all had the same story. No interviews on race day, and requests for interviews must be submitted 2 to 3 months in advance. And they said that with a smile. And I think it was the gentleman from Yamaha, he was very specific. He says, we do one-on-one interviews, no more than 2 per day, and normally Friday, maybe Saturday. So I said, okay, we'll keep that in mind for next time. Interestingly, one of the media men from Ducati is an American ex-journalist from SoCal. It was nice meeting him, and he agreed to see me for cappuccino next time I am in Bologna. So Tom Walker, if you are listening, and Tom Walker is the distant beat Ducati fan, if you are listening and can get a furlough from wife, it's time to rent a Fiat Punto again and go 100 miles per hour on the Autostrada as we did in 2006. That was quite fun. And this was late night driving like we were in the Mille Miglia. The race was won by Casey Stoner on a Honda. He tracked down pole sitter Jorge Lorenzo after taking second place from fellow Honda hombre Danny Pedrosa. Very good crowd, and hopefully this race will stay. One of the U.S. Grand Prix will go, because you know they're going to have one in Texas. So either the Indy or the Laguna Seca will drop. But the crowd was very big and very good. I was very happy. The only two riders who took the time to come out and sign autographs in paddock area, and this is the time I was there, which was quite a bit on Sunday, were Ben Spies and Czech rider Karel Abraham, and both were very friendly, so that was nice.
In Jesus' name, boogity, 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 amen.
It must be time for NASCAR. The Cup boys had a weekend off, but Nationwide Series was on. The good Lord and Lady Luck were smiling on Carl Edwards, who won the race despite a pit lane speeding penalty. And he was so excited by the invocation that he told his team boss, Jack Roush, that if anything happens to him in the race, he would like Pastor Jim to, you know,
do the last rites.
Services for him, yeah.
That's beautiful.
Proceed over his eulogy.
Yeah, there you go.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
it's inspiring.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Now you really want to live. Okay, finally, a remembrance of a driver taken away at a young age, Paul Warwick. Paul was younger brother of Grand Prix driver Derek Warwick. He was only 22 years old when on July 21st, 1991, he was killed while leading a British Formula 3000 race at Alton Park, and this is the track where Mr. Brazier and I went last April. What a beautiful location, I must say. In 1986, Paul won the Formula Ford Star of Tomorrow Championship with 8 wins from 12 races. The following year, he was second to J.J. Leto in the Formula Ford 2000 Euro Series. Starting in 1988, he raced in British F3 for 3 years, which included a stint with Eddie Jordan Racing. The Alton Park race was round 5 in the 1991 British Formula 3000 Championship. Paul had won the previous 4 rounds and was leading the race when he crashed at high speeds. He was ejected from his Majwick Motorsports car, in which, at the time, Nigel Mansell was one of the owners. Actually, the team was called Mansell Majwick Motorsports. Paul was declared the race winner as the race was stopped, and he later also became the series champion posthumously, like Jochen Rindt in Formula One. So there's, if you want to do more research on his career, please do a Google on Paul Warwick. And we thank you for listening.
Nass, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. So now, let's get to this interview. Mr. Max Angelelli.
His name is like for Maximiliano Angelelli, Max Angelelli. He raced in Europe in Formula 3 for a while and then came to the U.S., has been racing in Grand Am for many years successfully. And this conversation took place at Laguna Seca during their stop recently. And I hope people enjoy this conversation, and it's interesting what he has to say about the sad day in May at Imola 1994 when he was the pace car driver. Thank you.
Be going.
Sure.
Okay, folks, I'm here with the gentleman who got out of swimming pool to get into racing pool, Max Angelelli. Max, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Good, thanks. Very looking forward for this race. So I'm feeling good. It's all good.
Laguna Seca is a great track. What is your opinion of this track and this part of America?
I love California. Everybody can testify how beautiful is this area. California, Laguna Seca, Monterey, Carmel, San Francisco is fantastic.
Now, before we talk about your racing career, tell us a little bit about your swimming career. How far did you go before you got into automobilismo?
Not very far, because it was very difficult, physical, and I had to give up a lot of nice stuff I wanted to do, and one of those was karting. So I definitely switched, go karting, and then racing cars was it's a lot easier.
Okay. I understand earlier in your racing career you were paid not in liters but ham. What was the deal there?
That is absolutely true. The team owner was a big prosciutto ham businessman, and he was basically paying my services with prosciutto ham. So I was going to the racetrack with an empty car and coming back full loaded of prosciutto ham, and I had to sell it to pay my expenses.
So, okay, 1992, you won the Italian F3 Championship. Great job there. What was your goal at that time?
Definitely Formula One. And I was in the, was going testing. I was lined up to be the next Formula One driver for Italy, obviously. I tried everything I could. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it.
Now, is there two things about Formula One? First, they always say it's a lot of pressure and it's very political. Is that how it was when you were trying to get in?
No, because we're talking about 1992. long time ago. It was not that political. My struggle those days was that we had 9 Italian drivers, way too many, and I was Italian. So I would say that that was one of the limiting factors.
Now, you also raced in German F3 for a few years. What was the level of competition in German F3 compared to the Italian?
Extremely high. I mean, if you remember those days, we were over 60 cars racing. And before getting to the final race of Sunday, you had to go to 2 other races because they couldn't race all 60 cars in one event. So that was really, really, really difficult championship. I'm very proud that I won it.
Great. And who are some of the drivers you raced against in Formula 3 that most racing fans will know today by name?
I raced with all the Formula 1 champion in the last 15 years. I raced against them in Formula 3. And sorry, you're asking about Formula 3? What the Formula?
Yeah.
And also IndyCar champions. I raced against them in Formula 3. Many, I mean, Canaan, Franchitti, I just say one, Michael Schumacher, Hakkinen, so many, Coulthard, Fisichella, Trulli, many of them.
Did I hear you say Raikkonen?
No, I did not say Raikkonen.
Okay, so among the drivers who were there, Hakkinen, Mika Hakkinen, was he talkative?
Mika. No, it did not change. That's how he was.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is.
Yeah. Okay, in 2005, you won the Daytona 24 Hours with Wayne Taylor. Is this the most important win of your career?
Definitely, yeah. Yes, definitely yes.
Any other races that you're very proud of what you did? May not have been victories, but your performance was very good that you like to remember those.
Oh yes, many. In the early days, I mean, big international events where all these, like Michael Schumacher, like I said, big champions were, you know, competing each other. We were competing each other, like international races in Monte Carlo, in Macau, in Japan. In Holland, you know, those races when you had 70 Formula 3 cars all the same and finishing the top 3, you know, that was kind of proud for me.
Now, talking of Michael Schumacher, obviously he came through German F3 like Jarno Trulli. When you race against him, did you get the feeling that this is special talent? Or how was he in those days? He also doesn't talk now.
I can tell you, everybody knew on those days that Michael Schumacher, just to say one, okay, he's not the only one, but he was in a different planet.
Really?
He could do stuff that I was not even able to think about it. He could definitely qualify the car in pole without using qualified tires, for example. As nobody else could do it, not even Mika Hakkinen could do it. And neither myself, and I just started the P2 next to him, but I had qualified tires, he didn't.
Now that's coming from a good racing driver, it's very impressive. Okay, now you are racing for Wayne Taylor, and his son is your co-driver. How good is Ricky compared to his daddy?
He's much better driver.
Is he standing here?
No, otherwise I wouldn't say that.
Okay, good. Okay, Macau is famous for the F3 race. You have raced there a few times. Do you like street circuits as compared to like Spa and Laguna Seca? And what was your impression of Macau Grand Prix?
I do like street circuits, and I think Macau is the number one. It's on top of the chart. It's so difficult that makes Monte Carlo look like a funny kid play. I mean, yeah, absolutely, is not a comparison.
What's so difficult? Is it too many turns or very confined?
It's extremely long. Many turns, up and downs, and walls everywhere, very tight, no mistake. The smallest mistake, you're in the hospital.
Okay, what is your favorite track in Europe and also in America?
In Europe, I would say, some of Italian's beauty, like Imola, Mugello. And in the United States, Laguna Seca is one of them, definitely. Watkins Glen. I mean, long, quick, fast racetrack. Well, Laguna Seca is not long and fast, but all the races and all these particular corners makes very attractive.
Now, what about my favorite track, which is located near Brianza?
Brianza, there is a
Monza.
Monza, of course, Monza is great. It was good. Now they changed a lot. It's not as good as it was in the past.
How old were you when you went to Monza for the first time? Do you remember your first race there as a kid or teenager?
Very well. That was 1972 when my dad was racing a Porsche there.
Great. Okay, now you're from Bologna and Alexandre is also from the area. Did you know him when you guys were growing up?
Oh, very well. We raced against each other many years in the Formula 3 days with all the other big champions, I mentioned it earlier. And we actually spent a lot of time together because he was fiancé with my sister. So we're sharing.
Yeah, I read that in his book.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. I'm a huge, huge motorsports fan of Italian racing history, Maserati, Ferrari, Imola, Nuvolari, everything. Two of the first three world champions came from your country, but no Italian has become F1 champion since 1953. What will it take to change that, and do you think Ferrari should hire more Italian drivers or support them more?
This is a long, it is very difficult, very complex question. It's going to take hours to try to be synthetic. In Italy, it's all about Ferrari. Ferrari is huge and burns everything that is around. And that means a smaller category, younger driver, is become purely a business. And unfortunately, many good talents, Italian talents, are cut away way too soon. So in my opinion, we will have to wait a long time before seeing an Italian world champion in Formula 3, in Formula 1.
There is this driver, Mirko Bortolotti. What do you think about him?
Well, you just mentioned it, one that is fairly good. And we need to see about these Formula 1 teams, if there is anybody there that has enough, is brave enough to give him a chance to drive Formula 1. I think he's fairly good. But you know, one thing is to be good, another thing is to be a champion. It's a big difference.
Yeah, sure. Okay, Max, last question. If you don't want to answer, I will totally understand. You mentioned Imola. I was reading the sad events at Imola 1994. You were the pace car driver. Would you mind sharing what your thoughts are or what you remember most from that terrible weekend?
That was a three-day weekend that felt like a 3 years long event. And maybe even longer than that, with all the problems I had after the crash. All my memories, obviously, is a sad memory because two great drivers were lost their lives. But was so painful afterwards that I'm still feeling the pain for what happened afterwards, against me, I suppose.
Would you mind asking you what happened against you? How were you feeling so responsible or bad about it?
Well, let's say that I was not feeling responsible. Let's say other people made me responsible, which was completely wrong.
And that's because of the speed of the safety car or pace car and all that?
All I can say is that luckily I was a race car driver that luckily holded the lap record in my category those days back then. But if a normal person was driving that car that day, I can't imagine the trouble he would have faced.
Okay. Finally, how about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world. Anything you want to say to them?
To
our listeners. It's a podcast, so a lot of people listen all over the world. So if you want to say anything to them.
Be a fan of motorsport. Is a great sport, great community. It's open, it's very human. There's a lot of enjoyment and passion. Give us a chance.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate your time.
Thank
great
you.
Pleasure to meet you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Max, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now as we go into the wrap-up, we have no forum update today, because everybody's so busy with these back-to-back races, But I want to welcome SC Kubica fan from South Carolina, and obviously speaks fluent Polish. So welcome to the forum. We love new members that love Kubica, because I love Kubica, and I wish he was back. Quickly, I want to thank San Francisco Formula One Group, SFF1.com. Of course, they're going to be meeting in San Francisco at the Kizar Pub, our favorite place for the Grand Prix of Hungary. The flag drops at 9 a.m. on Sunday, July 31st. And of course, what they do is they get together in the morning, eat, drink, and watch the races. You could check them out or give them a call at area code 415-386-9292 and tell them F1 Weekly sent you for your 10% discount. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2011 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more info, just go to CameronKarting.com. Also, I want to mention our Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+, MySpace, and whatever else is out there. We're there. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and make us a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, just email me at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everyone who listens to the program. Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for f1weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.